Okay. I think somehow I have developed maybe the reputation of doing highbrow stuff. So, in order to, you know, bring things... I brought a toy, basically. So, you can see this lovely... what is it? What is it? Okay, I'm going to call it Moses Ark. Just to confuse you, Moses Ark. And I'm going to leave Moses Ark... up here, so that you can view it. Okay. Now, this morning, Mike preached on the beginning of the book of Exodus, and that was my conclusion. So, obviously, I had to do some readjusting, which is good. And yesterday, when I was preparing for today, I've done quite a lot of work on that. It was all neat and tidy. And this morning, when I woke up, I think it was God telling me, "Okay, you know, your introduction that was about half an hour long. That's interesting for you. That's good for you. That's useful for you. How useful is it going to be for other people?" So I scrapped the whole thing. A few weeks ago. I had a few things that came to me, and I sort of thought, okay, yeah, I've got something quite useful there. And on that day, I had an email from Dave asking me if I could speak. Basically tonight. And I thought, oh yeah, I've got something perfect. That's good. So I am obviously very well prepared because it's been a few weeks, and I'm pretty convinced that what I'm going to talk about tonight, I've received that a few weeks ago, so it's very well prepared. But maybe not. Okay. Bottom line is that you're going to have an introduction, and this introduction is going to be short. That wasn't the introduction, that was the pre-introduction. Okay. Moses Ark. And Jackie just spotted immediately what it was all about when I mentioned Moses Ark. I like details. I'm sorry, but I like the details. But I like the details when they explain the big story. And I think there is a very important detail, and that detail is this Hebrew word. There's the Hebrew bit, okay? So a bit of Hebrew, that's your word. Teva, I mentioned that a few weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago as well. Teva, I'm not going to ask you. Teva is one word that is translated in the Old Testament in two very different ways. Okay, the first one is Noah's Ark, so that's the Ark, Teva, when we talk about Noah's Ark. In the case of Moses, that's the basket. That's the basket. It's the same word. And there's a very good Jewish tradition, is that if it's the same word, you need to dig around it, because it means something. So there's your details, and that's your key to understand the whole thing. Okay, so... we pretty much know the story, so we're not going to spend a lot of time rereading passages that we would know. We know the story of Noah's Ark, the flood. We know that story. We might need a bit of a reminder of what happened to baby Moses, and you did that this morning, so that's perfect. That's perfect. Okay. Now, in the story, there is one key character. And that very important character in both stories that I think we need to read in parallel just because they use the same word. And that key character is flood. And baby on the Nile, on the River Nile, floating. So the main character in these two stories is the water. That's the main character. Okay. What does that mean, basically? The flood. These are the waters that destroy the rest of humanity. Everybody is destroyed by the waters, but waters that save Noah's family. So the means of salvation is also the means of destruction. The River Nile. The sad thing is that the young boys born of the Hebrews, by the order of Pharaoh, had to be thrown into the River Nile. So the water is the water of destruction of God's people. It's the waters that destroy the Hebrew males. But it's also the same river, it's the same water that saved Moses, floating peacefully on the river. He was floating among the reeds, wasn't he? Or the papyrus, what we want to call them. It saves Moses, who saves all the Hebrews. So that's the means of salvation of the whole nation. It's the water that does it. But it's also the same water that destroys Pharaoh and his armies. As they cross, as the Israel crosses the water, and when Pharaoh cannot cross the water, when the water just crushes them to nothing. And Moses' name, whether it's an Egyptian name or not, the Bible tells us that it means drawn from water. And that is emphasizing the fact that water is important. That's what he is. That's who he is. He's drawn from water. That's his name. That's who he is. And obviously, and I'm going to add a little something, because all of that is pure Jewish tradition, I'm just going to add something. The waters of baptism, that's what saves us. In some kind of theology that you're not going to agree with, but yes, okay. We get the idea, it's just an image, okay? Don't burn me yet. I've got waters that can save me. Okay, that's the introduction. On the little element that opens up the big story, because the big story is the story of salvation. This is exactly what is going to happen. There will be salvation, but if there is salvation, it means also that there will be people not included in this salvation. That's the destruction. And the same thing that saves is also what destroys. Okay, that was the introduction. Teva. T-E-V-A-H. Okay. What do you argue with that? No, I'm so well prepared that I've got quite a few things there. Getting closer to God and getting to know him better, that's obviously something that we are all interested in doing. Getting closer to God, getting to know him better. Okay. But how? What can we do to know him better? He may have the initiative, certainly. He may reveal himself to us day after day, that's certain. But we still have a bit of responsibility to do that. Okay. Even if I have this little reputation of doing a bit too highbrow stuff, and you're here tonight, it's because you're ready for a thick, big dose of Hebrew. Yeah, you're ready for that. Okay. It will come, maybe. I wouldn't want to disappoint you for that, but this is not at the core of what God has been telling me for tonight. The key image I have is about channels. Water, rivers, channels, in any case, channels that we use for downloading and uploading this knowledge of God that we seek. We're going to start with a passage in Deuteronomy. And I've left my Bible somewhere. Okay.
Deuteronomy 17. And
you're going to probably sort of say, okay, another obscure passage, but if it's in there, it's got a purpose. Deuteronomy 17, verse 14. I'm going to bring it to the point. First, verse 14 and 15. When you enter the land the Lord your God is giving you and have taken possession of it and settled in it, and you say, let us set a king over us like all the nations around us, be sure to appoint over you the king the Lord your God chooses. He must be from among you, your own brothers. Do not place a foreigner over you, one who is not a brother Israelite. So I won't put myself forward as a foreigner. Verse 18. When he takes the throne of his kingdom, he is to write for himself on a scroll a copy of this law, taken from that of the priests who are Levites. It is to be with him, and he is to read it all the days of his life, so that he may learn to revere the Lord his God and follow carefully all the words of this law and these decrees, and not consider himself better than his brothers, and turn from the law to the right or to the left. Then he and his descendants will reign a long time over his kingdom in Israel. Do you want to be a king? Do you want to be a king? Okay, that's a requirement. You have not just to read it or have it read to yourself. You have to write it. You need to do a bit of writing. Okay, in our day and age, obviously, we've got these computers, we've got iPods, we've got iPhones, so we've got all forms of the Bible that we can copy and paste instantly. Papyrus, of which the basket of Moses was made, papyrus, well, really, that lives for 20 years if it's a bit damp and humid, 30, 40 if you're lucky. After that, it self-destroys, really. So if we have today the Bible as it is, it's because we've had generations after generations of people that have been copying it out, rewriting it all the time and all the time. Okay, we've got so many Bibles here that we buy a new one every 2 or 3 years because, it's just a bit worn out. The reality is that, well, maybe we should keep it worn out and make it as worn out as possible. Okay. Writing and reading. So he has to read it. If you want to be king, you have to read the law. Now, is it just the book of Deuteronomy or is it the 5 books of Moses? Okay. It's going to be quite a lot of writing anyway. We've got a very high rate of literacy in the UK and in most developed countries. At the time, it was a privilege to be able to read and write. So there was just a few ones that had this privilege. Okay, if you're a king, that's a privilege, and if you have this privilege, you're going to work at it. Okay, you're going to make your own copy, and you're going to look at it word for word, because when we read simply verse 18, okay, it talks about all the words of the law, and I can't find it because it's in small print. Okay, it is to be with him. He is to read it all the days of his life, so that he may learn to revere the Lord his God and follow carefully all the words of this law. And that's a word for word, one word at a time. So you can't miss little teva. That one you can't miss. If you write it down, you're going to think about it. You're going to take your time. You're not going to just whiz through a passage. No, you're going to write it down. And I have to say that I've done that for just one book, not a big one, Galatians. But it is very, very useful to do. To rewrite it, make your own version. Writing out, so that you pay attention to the details. Copying word for word gives you time to meditate and to dig around. Writing and reading has a parallel with teaching and learning. Okay? So what the king needs to do is not just read, but it's also write. Writing and reading. Now, there's at least one teacher here, and I said the horrible thing, teaching and learning, didn't I? Okay, do you have that? Yeah? Not anymore. So you forgot about it. Okay, so you deleted all the files that had been, just compressed in there. Okay, good. Any more teachers? No? No. There's a buzzword that has been in schools, and that's teaching and learning. Okay? Now, that's a new thing. That's such a new thing that, teaching and learning. It's not about you telling the kids. It's not about teaching. It's what the kids are learning. Yeah, that's a great discovery. Okay? However... in Hebrew, it's the same word, okay? LMD, because in Hebrew you just have the consonants, and you make sense with adding some vowels in it, okay? So if you say lamad, for example, that's e learned, okay? If you say something like limud, I said the wrong thing. Okay, lamad, he taught. Okay, limud, that's he has learnt. And it's the same action. It is the same action. So teaching and learning is basically one and the same thing. Okay, Talmud, which is the gathering of all the teachings in Judaism, that is pretty much with one tiny little vowel different, Talmud, the difference between disciple and the gathering of all the teachings. So in Hebrew, it just works with just sticking a few vowels in the right place, and it means something different, but this is the stem. It's the key word. Okay. What has it got to do? That was a bit of highbrow stuff. Teaching and studying, it's uploading and downloading. So in terms of knowledge of God, learning about God, it's also what has been taught. Okay? It's discipling yourself. It's the same idea. It's not a discovery. It's not because in schools it's been a buzzword in the last 10 years that it's a new thing. Hebrew has been around for quite a few centuries. Now that's one point, and we're going to try to apply that to a passage that we know fairly well again. If I say the armor of God, that's a passage that we all know, and most of us will sort of say, I know what it is. It's in Ephesians 6, so let's go and have a look. Philippians. Philippians 6. It is Ephesians. Trust yourself. Okay. From verse 13 to verse 17. Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you have done everything, to stand. Stand firm, then, with the belt of truth buckled around your waist, with the breastplate of righteousness in place, and with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. In addition to all this, take up the shield of faith, with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. Okay. I think Paul is good at reading. He's very good at reading, and he's very good at writing. We do see the armor of God as what is given to us to wear in a kind of spiritual warfare that we are waging. Okay? But if you have a Bible that has a few columns in the middle, you should have maybe a few things that indicate that it's full of quotes. Paul is quoting mainly from Isaiah. And it's just you've got about 20 different verses that you think this is a quote from a prophet. Okay, we are not going to go through all of them. That's going to be your homework. Okay, but that's a fascinating thing to do. If someone is quick, could you go to Isaiah 11 verse 5? Isaiah 11 verse 5. Okay, righteousness is a belt. Okay. Helmet and the breastplate. If you're in Isaiah 59, verse 17.
He put on righteousness as his breastplate and the helmet of salvation on his head. He put the garments of vengeance and wrapped himself in zeal as in a cloak.
Okay, so we've got the helmet and the breastplate. Isaiah 52:7, we've got something about the feet and the sandals, what you wear. If you want the sword of the word, you go to Isaiah 11, verse 4, or Isaiah 49, verse 2, or Hosea 6, verse 5. You will find those fairly easily. You will find those fairly easily. Just like the king of Israel has to write the law and look at all the words, this is exactly what Paul was doing. He is reading, and the best proof that he was reading is that the way he is writing, he may not even be aware that all of those were quotes, but I would guess that he was. Okay? That means that he had this knowledge of God, this closeness to the scripture. He had this in mind, and that was at the forefront of what he wanted to say. Now, the armor of God, there's two ways of understanding this image. Okay? The armor of God is the armor that God gives us, or, and that's the original understanding of the armor of God in Isaiah or Hosea, it's the armor that God is actually wearing in his glory. So the armor of God is two things. We see it in the New Testament as that's the equipment that we have received or will receive or have to our disposal for our warfare. Again, it's an image. Originally, that's where Paul borrows the idea. Well, this is the armor of God, and that's God in his glory. So two ways of understanding the armor of God. Paul is reading and writing in his teaching. And probably that's the same idea. He's teaching, he's reading, he's writing. It's just one and single act. He's teaching to the Ephesians, and this is all made of quotes, mainly from Isaiah. From the wealth of knowledge that he has of the prophets, Paul is inspired to make one new stage, to take one new step, to give a new image. The image, no longer the armor that God is wearing, but the armor that we are now equipped with. So Paul helps his readers progressing in the knowledge of God. He's getting closer. He's uploading, downloading this knowledge. Paul, from a lot of reading, is inspired to more writing, and that's what he's doing. He's writing, he's inspired by his reading. Now, I'm not very comfortable with military images, okay, for many reasons. I worked as a civil servant for quite a few years in France, and part of my training was to get to know what we call the tool. That means the army, okay? Something that you just use. Okay. So I've done 7 weeks of military training, and I didn't really enjoy it because these things are designed to kill. And when you're a boy, you quite like gadgets. So, you know, when people are telling you, oh, you're going to learn how to drive a tank, you say, it's good. You just go in and learn how to drive a tank. And then you realize that it really is designed for, you know, something which is not having fun, and it's pretty evil, really. You also realize very quickly that if you don't have all the other gadgets, that means all the electronics from planes and from all the radars that you've got all around the place, you are not in a very safe environment because you are just one big target that can't see a thing. So I'm not comfortable with the military image behind it, but I'm very comfortable with the idea that this is about the knowledge of God. And now, the knowledge of God, again, just like the armor of God, could be the armor God is wearing, or the equipment that we have. The knowledge of God is two things. It's not just the knowledge we've got about God, but it's also the knowledge that he has about us. That's the knowledge that matters. He's the knowledge that he has about us. Not what we know about him. It's limited. There's a double meaning. Double meaning of armor of God, not just clever stuff. And that teva, you could call that clever stuff. when you put in, parallel the flood and Moses floating on the River Nile. It's not just clever stuff. It is in there. It is in there. And it's honoring God to sort of realize that, oh, yes, it's there. That's the whole picture. That's the whole plan he's got. So the knowledge of God is not just us knowing about him. It's getting to know what he knows about us. It's growing in the knowledge of God. That means growing in his knowledge, the knowledge that God has about humanity, us as individual humanity. Growing in the knowledge of God is downloading his vision on the world. It's how he sees us. It's reading and rereading, rewriting, retelling his big story. And each time we retell his story, we get closer. Each time we reread, we get closer. Each time we rewrite, maybe, we need to get closer. And we are getting closer that way. And that's the way he teaches us how he sees the world. Now, that's one path, that's one channel. But to me, this is very powerful, to see God in his word giving us a lot of food for thoughts, and not just thoughts, but thoughts that we need to live out. The renewal of the mind that Paul mentions in Romans, it's this downloading and uploading from God directly. Now, coming to church is good to be fed. Okay, we come to church to be fed. That's, again, an image that is quite clear in its meaning. But there's a difference between coming to church because you need to be fed and coming to church because you are hungry. And I think hunger is more important. However, when you feel hunger, you need to be fed. Okay. Hunger is better. It's a kind of spiritual fasting. And a Sunday morning service, for example, is very, very difficult because the objective is to get worshipping and studying at the same time with so many different individuals, and it's a task that is very complicated. I face classes of 30 kids in my school, and getting it right, feeding all of them, 30, can be very, very complicated. So get to over 200, good job. Studying and worshipping must be on an individual, based on an individual quest, but there is only one way of doing it, is being collective about that. Now, the hunger is a problem for the individual. The feeding is a problem for the community, for the collective act of worship or studying. Now, collective study and worship are also necessary. We don't need more knowledge as individuals, but we need more desire to learn. We need this hunger to go and find food. Learning is not so much about quantity, but it's much more about depth. It's getting into the little details that sort of say, okay, what can we do with that? Where is this leading? Reading, that's the highbrow stuff, reading. I don't know if it's really highbrow. I think it's something that has been designed from the very first verses that were put into writing. But reading is an active desire to know better, not knowing more, but knowing better. I'm going to conclude simply with the reminder of these two images, the armor of God, what he has, what he is in his glory, and the equipment that he has given us. The knowledge of God, in the same way, is not so much the knowledge that we have about him, that we can collect about him. It really is getting to know what he knows about us as individual, as humanity and being fulfilled with his knowledge inside us. Okay? We have one more song, I guess.